Mapping Doctors is an NIHR-funded multidisciplinary research project at Lancaster University. A quick disclaimer, this study is funded by the NIHR, but the views expressed are those of the members of the team and are not necessarily those of the NIHR or the Department of Health and Social Care. Hello and welcome to the Mapping Doctors podcast. My name is Ewan Lawson and I'm a GP and a senior clinical lecturer at Lancaster Medical School. Each of these podcasts explores an area of the work we're doing with various members of the team. And today I'm joined by Dr. Liz Brewster and Dr. Michael Lambert. I'll get them to introduce themselves. Liz.
Hi, I'm Liz Brewster. I am the principal investigator on the project and I'm also a senior lecturer at Lancaster Medical School.
And I'm Michael Lambert. I am a research fellow on the project. I'm looking at the histories and policy strand of the research. And I'm also responsible for widening participation at Lancaster Medical School.
Okay. So alongside considering the health inequalities that might be thought about for patients, we're also interested in considering who's actually in the medical workforce. And medical schools have various widening participation and widening access schemes to include more diverse students from more socioeconomically deprived backgrounds. So the first thing to ask you, Michael, is to tell us a little bit more about what is widening participation.
Broadly, it is about trying to diversify who becomes a doctor and who comes into studying medicine, recognizing that there are a range of barriers and challenges to certain groups in society from being able to train and get a foot on the ladder of the career for a whole variety of reasons. And this agenda was really ramped up about 10 or 15 years ago as a result of a report by the Chancellor of Lancaster University, Alan Milburn, while he was in the Child Poverty and Social Mobility Commission, writing that around fair access to professional careers, that the range of barriers preventing certain groups of people becoming doctors, but also which reinforced the perhaps privilege that other groups had. So the example that he gave, or one of the examples he gave, was the sons or daughters, the children of doctors, effectively who become doctors, were still quite high compared to other professions, about one in three. And so trying to rethink how admissions processes and how universities go about recruiting doctors is one of the key things of the report. And that's why there have been a whole range of initiatives since over the last 10 or 15 years to try and do something about them, both within individual universities, but also nationally too.
Liz, perhaps are there some numbers here? Let's try and put some meat on the bones.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's quite hard to tell sometimes. We kind of see in the GMC data about medical students and the data that we're working with in the UK Med that we're getting previously unrepresented groups coming into medicine. So we've got more women coming in now than we did have before. We've got more people from different ethnic backgrounds coming in. But this kind of question of socioeconomic deprivation, class, if you want to call it that, that's a little bit more difficult to tease out in the data. So we've got some figures in terms of, so the Social Mobility Commission, they estimated in 2016 that people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, working class doctors, that had remained quite low, about 4% in total. We've got some more recent figures, but again, they're difficult to unpack in a way. So Michael, I'm sure, will tell you a little bit about the original Selecting for Excellence report that started some of the trends that we've seen in widening participation. That has really recently, 2024, been updated to Fostering Potential, which is the latest set of figures we have. And they're showing that, yeah, things are slightly better. We're getting a bit more diversity, but we're talking about that figure of kind of 4%. Probably going up to something like 14%, which is a big increase in some ways, but also still not a fantastic representation from all the different communities we have across the UK.
If I can just follow up, Liz, I think one of the things that I really want to emphasise here is that that 4% figure has been sort of hardwired, baked into recruitment into medicine for the last sort of 70, 75 years. So there was a report back in 1944, which first mentioned this issue about people being prevented from studying medicine, not by virtue of their merit and ability, because of who they are, and do something about it. And the main focus of that report, Good Enough Report, was around female doctors. And you saw the slow feminization of the profession as a result of that over the next sort of 40, 45 years. But then the number of working class students was around 4%. Jumped forward another 20 years, was a Royal Commission on Medical Education, which again found the figure around 3, 4%. Jumped forward again another 15 years. It's the same kind of figure that fluctuates up and down slightly between those. But the same issue you were talking about gathering data and about changing that figure, they've remained fundamental problems of the National Health Service since its inception.
Okay, so tell us, Michael, what kind of things do medical schools do to try to widen and improve, to widen access to improve these figures?
I think the two key things that most medical schools do these days are is outreach and engagement activities. So that's trying to go into the communities and spaces that physically they occupy and make some of the more cumbersome processes around medical school admissions a bit clearer, try and support people. And so whether that's about making correct GCC choices, school choices, how to support and things like the admissions test, interview preparation, all those kinds of outreach activities, that's a key area to try and take away some of the hidden curricula, I suppose, of getting into medical school in the first place. But then there's also the other side of this, which is contextual admissions. So that's recognizing that effectively it is much easier, relatively speaking, of course, to get 3 A's, A stars in a lot of the larger fee-paying independent schools, perhaps, than it is in a lot of the larger comprehensive state schools. And that when you account for that by having lowered A-level, GCSE, other forms of assessment offers to study medicine, that's recognizing that students who've achieved those kinds of grades in those kinds of circumstances have done exceptionally well relative to their peers. So that's what contextual admissions tries to achieve. And the way that different universities apply that and outreach and engagement activities, that varies by the context of the institution and where they are. But it's the same broad approach that's how they're trying to push forward this agenda.
What are the numbers for independent schools currently in terms of that go to medical school?
It's still very high. It's around 50% of admissions into medicine still come from private or independent schools, rather than even state or state selected grammar schools.
And what, 8% of kids go to independent state schools across the UK, don't they?
Then you get a real flavour for that. Those figures now, which in themselves can feel quite different relative to the population at large, but that's been the position by and large for the last 70, 75 years. I mean, with some changes, but it's quite deep-rooted.
Why is this important? Why does it matter? Does it, you know, maybe those...
I think it is down to having doctors representing communities that they serve. And you can see this not just in terms of the quality of the patient care that they receive, because a lot of think tanks have published reports on the importance in this respect about the diversity of the medical workforce, but about how we understand health and the body and sickness as well. So the classic example for me, with the feminization of the medical profession, you've had endometriosis go from being this fringe concern that's been dismissed by the profession for many, many years, all of a sudden being taken seriously, being invested in research, and then being taken forward as something that warrants affecting, you know, half of the population or potentially in a way that before that wasn't the case. And I think you can take those same sets of issues and multiply them, particularly for a lot of the diseases that we know that happen disproportionately around socioeconomic deprivation and class, and particularly with multiple comorbidities too, that these are all things that clearly affect a lot of people, chronic and long-going and ongoing diseases and conditions and things like that because of these inequalities. But there just isn't the same interest, the same investment in terms of time, energy, and the resources of how the medical profession is organised, because it's not representative of people who work as doctors.
Liz, anything to add on that? Yeah, I know you have some thoughts on medical students and future doctors representing their communities.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really valuable and important that we end up with a medical workforce that understands the population that it serves. And we've got quite a lot of good evidence about culturally sensitive care and how that leads to better outcomes for patients. So both in general practice and then forward into thinking about secondary care outcomes as well. And I think there's just something about making, you know, medical care accessible for people as well, like in the sense of being able to go to someone and talk to them and tell the doctor about the particular symptoms that you've got. You need to kind of break down some of those barriers and to feel like you're going to be listened to and believed. And there is a cultural aspect to that. So, you know, the more we can do to diversify medicine and make sure that people, doctors, are representing the communities that they serve, I think the better we're going to be in terms of having a healthy population, having healthy outcomes, having people that can really talk to their patients about the concerns that they have and the barriers they might face to staying healthy.
Are they more likely to stay in those communities? Because that's one of the things on mapping doctors in particular about if we go down the path of this more diverse workforce, do we think that will actually help?
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't think we've got firm evidence at the moment. I think there is some evidence that says maybe people will go back because they'll have familiarity with the communities, they'll feel more comfortable there, maybe they'll want to go back to their homes. We've also got some people in our data set talking about the way in which people do still see medicine as a way to kind of move socially, to have this social mobility that we've talked about, and to think a little bit about the fact that actually maybe they want to escape from this poverty, they want to go somewhere else, and you know, medicine is a way out of that. So I think it's difficult to say it'll definitely have an effect, but I think the more people we have in medicine who understand the challenges of those communities, perhaps they're going to be more up for trying to deal with the challenges that are there.
I agree with Liz. I think it's a very perceptive point. I think part of the research into mapping doctors has really thrown open the range of issues that are around there, you know, about people's careers and which specialty they're going into, for example, as a result of their personal background. But again, it's hard to pin down the data in a firm and clear way because it is so fragmented. It's inconsistent over time. And it's also, I think, a lot of the time layered and rooted in places and spaces, which is then hard to unpack in a really easy, clear way that provides a single narrative. I think there's lots and lots of issues which we can contribute to and think with, but in a sense of trying to say there's a clear correlation, I think it's hard to say from the kind of the depth of the work that we've done.
Thank you both very much. Really interesting area to talk about, and obviously goes beyond just what's going on with mapping doctors and touches into all sorts of other areas and dimensions of how we provide care and high quality care to people. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.